Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We finished up the 26-28. Is that where we were up to? Page 15. The bottom, the last one. Last paragraph. Last paragraph. Okay. Maharaj Parikit, known as Vishnu Ratha, one who was always protected by Vishnu, bowed his head to receive the chief guest, Sukadev Goswami. The ignorant crowd of women and boys, greatly mortified in the presence of such royal and sagacious aristocracy, quickly scattered from the side of Srila Sukadev, leaving him only an atmosphere of gravity and calm, accepting without pretension the respect from all the exalted personages. Sukadev Goswami graciously took the seat of honor they kindly offered him. Now that he was surrounded by saintly sages and demigods, he resembled the moon amidst its entourage of stars, planets, and other heavenly bodies. In that assembly, Sukadev Goswami's presence was gorgeous. There was no doubt that he was respected by all. Verses 29-30. Nimsha 11. In 30th purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, in the great assembly of saintly personalities, there was Vyasadev, the Brahmarshi, Narada, the Devarshi, Parasaram, the great ruler of the Kshatriya kings, etc. Some of them were powerful incarnations of the Lord. Sukadev Goswami was not known as Brahmarshi, Rajarshi, or Devarshi, nor was he an incarnation like Narad, Vyasa, or Parasaram. And yet he excelled them in respects paid. This means that the devotee of the Lord is more honored in the world than the Lord himself. One should therefore never minimize the importance of a devotee like Sukadev Goswami. Means that the devotees... See, the material world's interesting place because it's based on perception. Reality is one thing, and how the conditioned soul actually sees things, that may be something very different. Right? So actually the whole concept, or one of the major concepts of the, or purposes of the Veda, is to change the perspective of the living entity. Because just by changing the perspective, many times then, one's ability to understand, one's ability to function, all this then falls into a more proper, a properly functional attitude. Does this make any sense? Right? So, what we see here is the perspectives, means the sages are seeing Sukadev Goswami as someone very elevated, very exalted. Though he is naked, he is not manifest in any symptoms of Varnashram, and he is just seemingly wandering aimlessly. The women and children that were there, they're seeing him as a novelty, some form of entertainment, something to, make their, ordinary life interesting for a few moments. Or they laugh and joke and, or appreciate just the mundane beauty aspect. Right? So, here we have very, very different. So they're there and it's laughing and joking. It's like a circus or something. But as soon as they get into the assembly of the sages, which is very sober, very powerful, then they immediately feel uncomfortable and leave, kind of like, disappear is the most unseen and unknown way possible. And then that leaves Sukadev Goswami in this, you know, proper, you know, atmosphere. So it's just, so that's the thing in the material world is this perspective. So if one adjusts perspective, basically one adjusts so many things. It sounds so simple. That's why actually Krishna consciousness is an extremely simple process. Extremely simple. Very straightforward. Non-complicated. But because the living entity is not used to that, then the problem comes is actually most of the process is simply trying to convince the living entity that it's okay and even better to be a devotee with devotional consciousness than to be conditioned. Right? Does that make sense? Because the process is very simple. It can be done in a moment. It's that easy. Right? So many persons, in one moment, they became pure devotees, pure unalloyed devotees. They just surrendered. It was complete. So it's possible. It's just a matter of changing how you look at things. As long as we think, I'm God, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, then it's going to be very hard to look at the perspective that it's actually Krishna who's God, and he's the controller, and he's the enjoyer. If that's just accepted, means wholeheartedly, and you're favorable towards that, and you want to assist in that by assisting those devotees that are involved in that, then you're part of the Lord's association. It's that simple. But because we've placed our identity in the material world, in material consciousness, let's say, then it slows everything down because that's okay. Okay, he's God and all that, but I'm still controller and enjoyer. Right? And then we have to shift that from demoniac, meaning I'm controller and enjoyer and God's not, or he may be, but, you know, that doesn't matter, to where God becomes prominent or important, and then we're trying to engage our controllingness and enjoyingness in the Lord's service, and slowly, slowly change it where I'm not the controller and I'm not the enjoyer, and all my endeavor for my own pleasure and sense gratification and facilities, now I will do that for God. Right? But it's just a matter of accepting it and doing it. But the problem comes is then we are worried about losing our identity. We don't trust. Material world means it hasn't worked nicely for us. So there's a tendency to not fully trust others or other situations. That, okay, if I give up my material endeavor, will I actually be happy? Will I be maintained? Will I, and, you know, will things go well for me? Does this make sense? So this is what we're having to do is, you know, whatever speed we can move at, but, you know, bit by bit, we are just convincing ourselves that it's okay. And then we can let go a little bit more of that material identity, the conditioned nature, and then slowly, slowly accept our spiritual identity. Does that make sense? So we can see here, you've gone from, that's why the spiritual, the concept that, oh, everything's finished and everything's, you know, that's it and everything's over and that's all. But that's, no. It can be like that, but if you change the consciousness, then it changes. We see here, you have a circus going on, and in one moment it went from a circus to a serious assembly of sages. Right? As soon as the women and children became aware of what they had just walked into. Right? Because if they had figured it out before, it wouldn't be here in the Bhagavatam. They would have disappeared long ago, and Sukadeva Goswami just would have walked in, and they would have just described him, right? But it describes him walking into the group of sages. They're joking, laughing, doing whatever they're doing. Right? Then only because they were so absorbed, even though it was overwhelming who was there,
But they're so absorbed in their, you know, their little, how you say, entertainment, that they didn't notice. And then when it became overwhelming to them, then only they noticed. But they could have noticed earlier. You know what I'm saying? But they didn't. So that's the thing, is that it's just, we're very, how you say, stubborn in adjusting. So only when it's extremely obvious, like that. So that's how Krishna works. Krishna will start off subtle, right? They could have come across and noticed all the sages and been worried about that, right? Kunti Devi, when they were traveling after that whole program with Hidimba and Hidimbi, then they were traveling along the bank of the Ganga, and she wanted to take a bath. But the Ganga, you see, this Ganga is quite wide, right? It's not small. And so then, but the difficulty was, is that there are sages and Brahmins on the other side of the river taking baths. So she didn't want to take bath there. So they had to arrange for her some place where she was out of the way, so she couldn't be seen when she was taking bath, right? That's Brahma's other side of the river, right? You can't even make eye contact with them. You can't, you know what I'm saying? It's like, so that, but she was subtle like that. And here you have a whole bunch of people that walk in with him right into a bunch of sages, you know, right in front of them, and they still don't notice. And it's not until kind of like the atmosphere is very grave and quiet and all these other people aren't laughing, you know, like they're laughing, that they kind of like think, well, hey, maybe we should, you know, how you say, exit stage left here, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Okay. So that's the whole thing, is that we are just simply trying to convince ourselves that it's actually okay to be Krishna conscious. In theory, we know it's a good thing. That's the intelligence. So anybody who has taken up devotional service are the most intelligent people in the world, or in the universe, actually. But it's a matter of convincing their mind, their feelings, their needs, their emotions, that it's also okay. Right? Because a living entity doesn't really appreciate loss. Loss is not something that makes sense to Satchitananda, right? Sat means he's eternal, so whatever you get doesn't go away. You know, it's always active, it's always dynamic, it's always full of proper knowledge, and it's always satisfying. That's the principle we're working from. Unfortunately, we put it onto the material world rather than the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense? These are known as Vaikuntha Brahma and Ananda Brahma. Brahma means illusion. That's not Brahma. That's, you know, Brahman. This is Brahma. So Vaikuntha Brahma means we take the material world as eternal. And Ananda Brahma means we take it as a place of happiness. So that's why the Bhagavatam, again and again, is constantly bringing up this point of Dukkalayam Ashashvatam. It's a place of misery and it's temporary. Because if you cut these two, you cut material engagement. Right? Because unless the Sambandha is in place and the Prayojana is in place, there is not Abhideya. Does that make sense? So the Sambandha is, we think material world is eternal, but Bhagavatam is saying it's temporary. So because we think it's eternal and it will give us happiness, we endeavor materially. Right? Then, but if the material world is temporary and it's a place of misery, then why would you endeavor? You know what I'm saying? So by these two, then you cut the third. Abhideya is always connected with the other two. It's the field that it's there. Right? The situation and the feelings. The situation, relationships, feelings. When those are in place, then there's activity, right? Functions like a robot. Right? Does that make sense? If there's not the proper mood and environment, one doesn't function in that. Or one functions reluctantly, but one creates one's own emotions to supplement that. You don't like that, so you supplement that with being upset or thinking of something else or, you know,
Does that make sense? In other words, no one functions like a zombie. Does that make sense? Right? So, therefore, if you cut these other two, which are the field for activity, there is no activity. So it's that simple. The Bhagavatam, therefore, just targets these two points. It's temporary, and it's full of misery. Right? That's all. You don't have to say material endeavor is useless. You can say that. That's on the side. That's just so you know. But once you take out the other thing, there is no enthusiasm. Right? So that's the whole thing that one's trying to do is change that. But the point is we're not my body, so therefore this is temporary, but that's eternal. This is full of misery, but that is full of happiness. Right? Does that make sense? And the best part about it is if you put the consciousness of that on this, this acts spiritually. Does that make sense? So then technically there is no material world. It's just a matter of superior energy and inferior energy. Does that make sense? Right? Like you have, let's say, somebody has a very large mansion and grounds and everything like that. So basically most of it will be of very good quality. Right? But there's going to be some areas that, you know, that's where you keep all your sheds are and your nurseries and, you know, go downs and garbage and, you know what I'm saying? There has to be some place. It's just a work area, so therefore it's not so fancy. Right? So you can say it's inferior to the rest of the place, but it's still part of the estate. Does that make sense? So, now the part of the estate that is developed, that's for the happiness, enjoyment of the persons who belong there. Right? The person who owns the estate and all his associates. Does that make a sense? Now, if you have somebody who is a problem, but at the same time as they're part of the scene, they're part of the family, then you won't keep them in the nicest places because they'll make trouble. They'll break, they'll this, they'll that, they'll disturb it for everybody else. So therefore, you make some arrangement for them in the out-of-the-way place. So they're still in the estate, but they're not where they can bother those who understand and appreciate and behave properly. Does that make sense? So the material world is just inferior energy. So since the living entity wants to try to enjoy separately from God and control and enjoy, the internal potency is not going to allow that. So, and the living entity can't be void. They have to be active. So they're given dead matter, which doesn't care if you try to control it or enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? Dead matter couldn't care less. Right? It just exists. That's why it's called Brahman, because it exists. Right? But it's inferior Brahman, because it's not conscious. Does that make sense? So then, we can try to play around with that. Right? Does that make sense? So, it's just a matter of changing the consciousness that this is also part of the estate. You can deal with even an inferior part of the estate with the same consciousness that of the superior part of the estate. So you can keep it clean, you can keep it nice, you can use it properly, and you'll get the same benefits. You know what I'm saying? It may not glitter as nicely and have as many fancy things, but you know what I'm saying? You know, there's still four walls and a floor and a ceiling and like that. Does that make sense? So it still, in principle, functions the same way. So you can engage it in the Lord's service just the same way as you would the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? But it's just not the best quality, right? It means you can cook with inferior pots and everything like that, and it's still cooking. And then if you have superior things, then that's another thing. Then it makes it so much easier. Right? You know, the oven, the door doesn't stick every time you try to open and close it. And, you know, the knives are, you know, they'll actually cut something, you know, rather than you have to bludgeon the cauliflowers into, you know, submission. And you know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay.
Then the other part here is we see is Sukadeva Goswami, without pretension, is able to accept this respect from the exalted personages. So it's not that it's a matter of prestige, it's just a matter of God consciousness. God's great, knowledge about God's great, and it's just a matter of reality. I had one God brother, he was alone with Prabhupada in the room, and somehow or another he's, you know, was saying, you know, some eulogies to Prabhupada. Oh, you're the greatest, you're the this, you're the that. You know, Prabhupada's just looking at him, and just with one of those, you know, looks, he just kind of like stops him. And then he says, I know who I am. So it's like, what are you going to do about it? Okay, he's the greatest, he's the this or that, so what are you doing? Okay, I've come here to save the world, so what are you doing? You know, you're going to stand there and offer prayers, you're going to do something, right? Like that. We had another God brother, it was always, how do you say? I think Prabhupada was always kind of amused by it. When Prabhupada would go on parikram around the deities, circumambulation, then he would walk in front of Prabhupada with his back to Prabhupada. I mean, with his back away from Prabhupada, walking backwards with his hands folded and saying this and that and going on and on. I think, you know, one time he got away with it, and the next time a little, and then after that, Prabhupada said, don't you have something to do? It's like, you know, go do something practical. So it's like demigods are offering prayers, that's nice. But it's formal, but it's kind of like, but that's there, but there's a step forward. What is he going to do? So we see the residents in the spiritual world, they're doing something. And then those prayers are expressing that affection that they have, that they do things. You understand the difference? Like that. So Krishna consciousness is practical, so the Abhideya is the prominent. So here then, because of that, it has its methods and it has its ways Krishna likes it done. So if it's done in that way, then there's no need of pretension. So it's actually a very strange concept that we can see from here, that Krishna consciousness, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, kirtans, all these actually the five big services, have any element of prestige and status to them. Does that make sense? It does not. It didn't make sense. We tend to overlay onto these devotional elements, devotional elements or aspects, prestige. Right? Because we're conditioned, we have to function according to religion. You know, it means conditioned religion. That means we're an ashram. We're not able to function purely on spiritual, religion, which is simply we're servant of Krishna. So because of the material identity, we do have to take into consideration gender, age, nature, ashram, all these things we have, economics, all these different things we have to influence, knowledge. Does that make sense? Family, relations. So then it gives us a sense. It's good. It's progressive. So it's always important that these elements of lesser aspects of devotional life, the negative aspects of them are pointed out simply so that you continue the same process that you're doing of discrimination to take it to a higher level. Right? Because ultimately what you're trying to distinguish is between spiritual and material. Right? And accept the spiritual. Leave the material. Right? That's what we're trying to do. So
But since spiritual doesn't absorb our consciousness all the time, still that principle of accepting what is spiritual, rejecting what is not spiritual, becomes applied on the mundane of, okay, the temple president is superior to the vice president, who's superior to the temple commander and the Sankirtan leader, who's superior to the temple devotees, who are superior to the new bhaktas, who are superior to those who haven't figured out the devotees, who are superior to those who are actually against being devotees. Does that make sense? So then this discrimination, because discrimination is so important for devotional life, that it's cultivated at every moment. Therefore, it's worked into the system. But we become attached to the lower application instead of its actual purpose. Does that make sense? Right? So that's everything in the Vedic culture is all an external application of a transcendental principle. That's why it's very unwise to militate against Vedic principles in the name of modernism. Because that simply shows one's ignorance of our devotional process and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That's all it proves. Does that make sense? Because everything has that. Does that make sense? So, any aspect of the Vedic culture, if you understand the principles on which the spiritual works, and the purpose behind the Vedic to get you to that platform, then there's no problem with it. That's called broad-mindedness. It's not the narrow-minded, keyhole, liberal perspective of the contemporary so-called intellectuals. Does that make sense? The modern usage of liberal is a misnomer, because they're the least liberal of people. All it is that somebody over here has some very traditional, rigid view on life, and that includes a certain people, group of people and things that are okay and activities, and anything outside of that's not good. Liberal just simply means that you take that same vision, but just you don't necessarily accept tradition and all those things, but you just shift it to what is your purview of, well, who are the good people and what are good activities and this and that. Right? Because you'll get the same anger, rage, hatred from a liberal towards a conservative as a conservative towards a liberal. So what's the difference? In principle, they're the same thing, just that they have a different value system, that's all. But as far as being liberal, and they're not broad-minded. It's just the name that you give to them. And because there's, you know, a certain amount of words, liberal's been chosen. But liberal means, actually, that you're gracious. You're able to give space to those that you may not, you know, be able to be interested in. In other words, I am comfortable in my position, and therefore those who are outside of that, who would do things I wouldn't do, that's their, they can do that if they want. But it's not going to affect me, because I am comfortable with myself and situated what I'm doing. I don't need to have everybody else doing what I'm doing to confirm that what I'm doing is okay. That's for persons with less faith. So, therefore, we don't want to, you know, we're not meaning to point out that liberals have less faith, but we're just discussing technical facts here. You know what I'm saying? The position itself is very weak. Right? That's why the devotee is mahatma, broad-minded, not duratma, narrow-minded. So, of duratmas, then you have the liberals and the conservatives. Mahatmas means they can accept both. Because they both have value. Right? tradition and those things, that's important because it works. Because the liberals are also desperately trying to create their own tradition. Though unfortunately every 10 years it gets turned over. But they have a 10-year tradition. You know what I'm saying? While the other one is that they're willing to try things and make things dynamic to time, place, and circumstance, that's very important from the liberal. So when you have traditional values, you understand how things actually mechanically work, and you're willing to apply that according to time, place, and circumstance, bingo, you have actually someone who knows and follows the real Vedic culture. And that is what is connected to the spiritual world, because it's the reflection. But instead of using it for your own purpose, materially, you're using it to get out of the material world. Right? In other words, the knife probably gives the example. The knife can kill someone, or used by the doctor, save someone. Or electricity can create cold or heat. So material energy is just inferior energy that you can use either to bind yourself or to free yourself. Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of prestige or that. It's just a matter of creating intelligence, trying to create discrimination. So it's like this. If we want to discuss something, and then we should have something we focus on, right? If you want to get anything done, there must be focus. So if one person talks at a time, then there can be focus. If everybody talks at the same time, there's no focus. Does that make sense? So naturally then, you want one person talking at a time. Then you want to see that the conversation stays in what it is. You've been in conversations before. How long do they stay on any one point, right? Unless the point is really juicy or emotional or that, it doesn't stay for very long. It'll start on one thing and go to the next, right? So to keep it on one thing, therefore then someone leads a discussion. Right? Does that make sense? And it's not a matter of prestige of that. Otherwise, that's what Prabhupada's pointing out here. He wasn't a Brahmarshi, Rajarshi, or Devarshi. Not only that, he didn't have any clothes. Right? He's 16 years old. Everybody else there is older than 16. 16, he was 16. Not he looked 16. He looked 16 and he was 16. Right? You know, Vyasa's a bit older than that. Brahma's a bit even older than that. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, influence. He has women and kids goofing on him. You can't get, you know, socially status-wise lower than that. Okay? He's acting like a madman. Madmen aren't known for being, you know, great, eloquent, you know, intellectuals. So, okay, there goes your Brahminical, you know, prestige. Influence, you know, he's being goofed on by women and kids. That goes. Economics, he doesn't even have a, you know, enough to buy a piece of cloth. It's not, says there's not even one stitch of clothing. Right? And age-wise, he's one of the youngest ones there, or probably the youngest one there. Right? So, where's the prestige? Right? But he was the one that excelled them all. Why? Because of Krishna consciousness. Does this make sense? Like that. So, it's very, very important. These details are very important because it's perspective on whether you say somebody's doing something's prestige. He's a temple president for prestige. Or because somebody has to take responsibility to lead the temple. It could be anybody, but it just happens to be this person. Anybody who has the qualification to do it could do it. But this person's doing it. So since they're doing it, what's the problem in affording them the facility to do it? You know? Does that make sense? Why is it everything has to be a question of, oh, why him, why that one, why this one, oh, so what, you're going to do it? Prabhupada had two very nice things he said to everybody who had an attitude on these things. first one he would bring out, it was, first do what they're doing, then talk. You can't do it? Shut up. He was very strict on that. You know, somebody's criticizing a GBC, they're not a GBC, he'd just say, first do what they're doing. Or they're a big preacher, or the sannyasi, first do what they're doing. You become the GBC, you become the big preacher, you become this and that, you do what they're doing. Then you criticize. You can't do what they're doing? Then be quiet. Because the point is we may feel really good about being able to criticize, but anybody can do that. Any idiot can criticize. That's the point. We think we're very good. If we find a fault in others, then that means I'm better. But the Vedic standard is you have something, some good quality, then you're better. Finding fault, that's easy. Anybody can do that. But the modern social system, there's this idea, if I can find fault, I'm better. It's so childish. I think you can read about this in Lord of the Flies, if you really want to know. Any ignorant group of untrained children, this is what they will first do. Whoever's the biggest bully, who can make the most noise, who can find the most fault, they're in charge. So therefore, you could say that the contemporary culture is a bunch of somewhat sophisticated children. That's what it is. Just sophisticated children. They're not adult at all. Adult simply, they don't let on what is their needs. They're able to keep it quiet. That's all. Yes?
Children do forgive.
Children do forgive. Yeah, if they're young enough. When, once the how you say, the, what are those? Hormones start flowing, then forgiveness starts waning.
Okay, so here it means that devotee of the Lord is more honored than the Lord himself.
Now, of course, then we'll immediately say, yes, well, this is the pure devotee, or this is this, that. But that's nice. But we have to understand that pure devotee starts generally from the Madhyam platform, despite the overwhelming popularity of thinking it means a nitya siddha. Pure devotee means a madhyamadhikari. If you don't accept that, you do not know our philosophy. And Prabhupada points out, if the kanista is very fixed in faith to Krishna and Guru, they're also pure devotee. So what are we going to do about that? This is a big problem. Because it's really easy for us to not respect anybody, because the pure devotee, we think, means an uttama. And an uttama, we think, means someone on the platform of prema. And someone on the platform of prema, we think, means is the nitya siddha. So it just simply means these simple principles given in Nectar Devotion of Shraddha to Prema, we haven't studied, we don't know. Because a nitya siddha means they're entered into the pastimes, they've crossed beyond prema. Right? They're situated there in their transcendental form, and there's no connection to the material world. And that's anybody who either started there or went there. They don't make distinction. We make distinction. We have to remember we're the ones that are trying to figure out the difference between material and spiritual. They know the difference, so they don't have to distinguish. Right? Then someone who is uttamadhikari, they can be in bhava or in prema. In bhava, you can fall down from bhava. Believe it or not, first class devotees can fall down. Bharat Maharaj is given in the Bhagavatam. Hari Bol, hello. Right? We're saying all this strongly because I perceive in the movement that a neophyte devotee or someone acting neophyte with a neophyte mentality feels confident that if they can find any fault in any devotee, they don't have to respect, they don't have to care. And you won't find anywhere in Shastra that this is accepted or allowed. Nowhere. Right? I think you could find it in the French Revolution. You could probably find it, how do you say, what was that guy? Cornwall or whatever. Who was the guy that brought down the king? Started the...
Cromwell.
Huh? Cromwell. You know, his group. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people who could do this. The communists in Russia. Very common. Very popular. If you look at history, that's what's going on. People who have no respect for authority and that, and can find fault in authority, therefore they bring it down. And you study each and every one of those, and you see there may have been some improvements in one side, but on the other side, the whole religious and the social and culture, everything's lost. All you have to do is study history. Right? Of course, as I said, the cliche of those who are history majors is the only thing you learn about history is no one learns from history. Right? Like that. So, we have to be very, very careful on knowing what's here. Prabhupada would see them as devotees, amazingly enough. Like that. I mean, he'd see these guys still had their beards and long hair and that, but they were chanting Hare Krishna as devotees. You know? Like that. And even if they weren't devotees, he'd still deal with them nicely. Right? But it's become the standard that my feelings and gossip are important. You know? So it's kind of like, what has happened to the devotional culture? Here we see, you can say he's a kid, 16 years old. Like that. And he's come into the assembly and he's been given the respect. Like that. So we have to know what is respectable. Right? Pure devotee is advanced devotional service. A pure devotee doesn't mean that there's not any impurities. Pure devotee basically means 60% is accomplished. That means 40% anartas, all kinds of disgusting, nasty things are there. 40%. And strangely enough, those who spoke the scriptures, write the scriptures, you know, glorify the scriptures, they're all comfortable with that. They don't buy the contemporary 100% or nothing, black or white. They don't accept that. They accept 60%, you're purified, you're advanced. 60%, that means 40%. So that means you could find a lot of fault. And for the neophyte, that's overwhelming to them, that it means I don't even have to or can't respect such a person. Right? So the problem is, as we said before, because you have a main principle that comes down into our life, then we take that and we apply it everywhere. So that means then we don't respect anybody. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? Like the I think it was one of the first day or second day, we asked for a show of hands of those who, you know, felt they have ever experienced, not they have now, ever experienced very close, deep, trusting relationship where you could really, you know, nicely express yourself and that. And out of 24 people, 4 people reluctantly raised their hands. So that's the problem. But I guarantee you, if we went back in time, you'd ask this, and you get a unanimous. Because maybe they haven't tasted it materially, but spiritually they would have. You know? So, what we can see is the more we allow the modern paradigm to, I say, infiltrate into our life, then the lower the quality standard of even mundane life is. I mean, it's pretty bad if you haven't ever experienced a close relationship. That's bad. Human life means you experience close relationships. That's what Varnashram is for. To ensure the depth and quality of human interaction. That's what Varnashram is for, despite the modern definitions. Varnashram is to ensure that the conditioned living entities interact with each other on a platform of standard human interaction to ensure that their sensual, emotional, intellectual needs are fulfilled so that they can focus on God consciousness. That's Varnashram. Like that. It's not an economic system, it's not this, that. Those are included to ensure that that goes on. But that's what Varnashram is. Right? Does this make some sense? Okay, so therefore we can take from here is that devotional qualification is what's important. Like that. At the same time, it's not that the formalities of the culture aren't followed. You know, people are respecting, folding hands, standing up, sitting down, offering seats, this, that. That goes on because that's the form. There must be some form. You know, it's like that. Here he comes, gives us a seat, elevated seat. What if we say, well, he's a yogi, he just stood out in the middle of the river, the Ganga there, and didn't want to get too close, right? And then from over there, then he spoke Bhagavatam. You know what I'm saying? So then we could go, well, that's nice, but we could never do that. So Bhagavatam doesn't actually relate to us. You know, it's someone, unless you can stand on the water out in the, you know, the Ganga and give a class, then, you know, hey, you know, you just, you don't have it, you know, so. Does that make sense? So, therefore, there's a form. Krishna likes it like that. He likes, you know, giving seats to people and doing this and doing that. That's what he likes. So if we like God, we'll like that also. We don't like those things. Then how are you going to like God? How are you going to do that? We can say, well, because everybody's perfect there. Yeah, everybody's perfect there. But unfortunately, you'll never get there with that mentality. You will never get there. You change your perspective where you can appreciate what Krishna appreciates. Right? You know what I'm saying? Somebody comes and gives this little thing to Krishna. I mean, guaranteed. It means gave a little thing to Krishna. Somebody came to the temple, danced for Krishna, or sang for Krishna. Went away. You never saw them again. They never did anything again in Krishna consciousness. One that's devotional Sukriti is there. There's a good chance from that they're going to become a big apsara or this or that or big dancer, a big somebody in the universal affairs, simply for that little bit that they did for Krishna. So Krishna somehow is very, very generous like that. That's liberal. That's the liberal. Is they've done a little bit and you give them that space. It doesn't mean that you're not aware and conscious of what's improper, but it's not a topic of discussion. It's a matter of it's something what you can help them through if the opportunity's there. Right? Let's say you're making a fire, okay? And in making this fire, you know, you have to start it off small and all that. Do you focus on the wetness of the wood or, you know, the mushroom growing off the side or the piece of dirt on the end or, you know, like that? Or do you focus on the flame? On the flame. But the flame is really small, and this pile of wood's really big. So why would you focus on the flame, since it's the smallest part of it? You know what I'm saying? And since nowadays it's all numbers and volume, I mean, it's the Vaishya viewpoint, Vaishya and Shudra viewpoint. is what does the mass do, and what is the numerical value of it, right? That's how Vaishyas and Shudras gauge everything. Numbers and how you say, yeah, basically numbers and volume. How many people are involved? I mean, Vox Populi is a 100% Shudra thing. Everybody else is doing it, so I got into it. Like that. Or, you know, how much profit you're getting off it. What are the numbers you can count off of it? Then it looks interesting. But so why would you concentrate on the flame, which is a little dinky little thing, and you got this big pile of wood? I mean, it's wet here, it's got mushrooms and fungus growing all over, you know, there's a bunch of, what's it called, that lycithin or lichithin or whatever it is, lichen growing off of it over here, that doesn't burn very well, and you know, there's some mud on it here, and you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, it's just like, this is a write-off, this is never going to get anywhere, why even bother? So you can understand the difference between the devotees, the devotional mentality, and the non-devotional. Prabhupada looks for a spark and fans that. The rest of it will go away. You fan that spark, what's going to happen with time? Is there going to be anything left of the rest of that wood? Is the wetness going to be there? Are those mushrooms going to be there? No, it's all going to be gone. The fire will have consumed it all. Does that make sense? So that's the difference between the devotee's viewpoint, as we can see exemplified here, and the non-devotional viewpoint. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it says one should never therefore minimize the importance of a devotee like Sukadeva. Now, I mean, it's obvious, but the main principle of devotee in general is still there. They're still special. I mean, so you think of it. How many devotees? Okay, we'll know of some thousands of devotees, right? There's a lot more than that. It actually goes into millions. We don't have enough faith in our system to actually appreciate it. There are tons of people out there that really like the Krishna conscious philosophy, but they can't relate to the lack of culture in the devotees, so they kind of stay away. There are tons of people. Tons of people. I guarantee you there's millions of people. I'm not exaggerating, I mean millions. Who actually accept Krishna consciousness is a thing, they're taking some part of it, they're using something in their life. Right? That everything's going in this more shastric, metaphysical, leaning towards the Eastern. That's all coming from the potency of this movement. Unfortunately, we're unable to take advantage of it like that. One of the most popular things in the New Age scene in America is kirtan. Hare Krishna kirtan and other kirtans. You know, based on Indian mantras. And you want to know who's doing those kirtans? It's not us. It's not us. It's just karmi people who kind of like, you know, getting into the devotional thing. We're too busy hiding. You know, nobody, we're just fitting in, you know. Well, you have all these people who are very happy to not fit in, and to go to a yoga center and chant Hare Krishna, and you know, they have people that come and they have their favorite kirtaniers, and it's a big thing. I'm not joking, it's a big thing. Like that. Because they don't have problems saying, this is what I do. They have faith, so therefore they can do something, yes.
Even in India, it happens that in the night, maybe from 9 o'clock almost up to 2 or 3, and then they just have these kirtans. This goes on and on
for 24 days.
People are just there. Everybody is there. The whole village, other villages,
everybody is
there.
Yeah. So does it make sense? Yeah. It's just going on. So, therefore, it's a matter of appreciating what is there, starting from that. See, in other words, there's two things in this discrimination. If I can find fault, then in theory I should be able to find what's good. Of course, depending on what I may practice, I'll find more fault than what's good. Like that. But we're not talking some kind of just goody-goody kind of nice guy thing. We're talking about, can you actually see what's good? That part should be appreciated. If there's any way to cultivate it or take advantage of that association, then do. If not, then don't. What is weak and all that, that's easy enough. Those aspects we don't associate with. And if they're too, you know, if they're too prominent, or the situation it is, we'll bring that out more in that situation we don't associate. So it's just matter of fact. You know, it's just like, you know, do we get into a whole thing and, you know, oh, they're breathing, you know, like that. Oh, they breathed in. Oh, hey, he just breathed out, like that. Hey, he just scratched his head. Wow, like that. He coughed. Wow. You know, anybody get into that? No. They're just normal. So in Krishna consciousness, just these things are normal. You see what's good, take advantage of that. What's bad, you avoid. Bus. It's not... it's not, you know, a new theme for, you know, how you say? I don't know what you call it, you know. A new soapy or something, you know. I can't think of it. Say, like, desperate community members or, you know, or, you know, you can start something up that's, you know, such a, you know, what will happen next week, you know? Will he scratch his nose? Oh, you know? Will he have a tissue to blow it when it leaks? Tune in next week. Is this, you know? Makes some sense. Okay. Any questions on this? Yes. Basically here, why it's been 60%, it's 6/10. In other words, it's 1/50%. You understand? That's why it's given. Rupa Goswami gives this at 6/10. So, means in other words, the predominance is there. That's see, the Vedic concept is what is predominant. That's what you take it at. Because otherwise, nothing is completely, you don't have 100% just kshatriya, 100%, you have a mix. But what's prominent is like, means you see, is like all these great personalities, the great artists and musicians and these kind of things, eloquent in the speech and all these things, they can render service, like you see, when they had the Rajasuya, then Krishna's taking care of the shoes, and this one's seating people here, and this one's taking care of the food. So they can serve, so, but they're not shudras, because that's not their, that isn't all that they do. And no one's richer than Yudhishthira and all them, but they're not business people. That's not that, they're not sitting around thinking how to make money. Right? They have great knowledge, they know the scriptures, they can do their yajnas. Arjuna, when he went on his exile, you know, after that whole thing when he went into Yudhishthira's room when he was with Draupadi, he did the yajnas himself. The Brahmins were simply there chanting and assisting. Like that. But his prominence is how to protect the people and all the diplomacy and other elements that are necessary for that. That's how they were trying to figure out who the Pandavas were when they took Draupadi. So they sent, you know, Drishtadyumna went to check. And he would sit outside and listen to them talk. So what they were talking about before they were going to sleep, they were talking about the weaponry and this and that, and who was fighting who and who beat who and all these different things like that. And, you know, the great kings of before and the examples they set and, you know, all this kind of like very dignified religious regulated power. So then you know that's prominent, so that makes them a Kshatriya. Right? You take a Shudra, it's not that he's not smart and intelligent. You know, it's not that he doesn't have influence, it's not that he doesn't have money. But his art, the expression of his art, is what is important for him. So therefore he's called a Shudra. So like that, you can take all these. And the ashrams also. They all function on the same principles. All four ashrams function, but the proportion, where proportion is more, then it's called by that. Does that make sense? It's a very important principle, because we take this all or nothing. We'll have, so what's prominent? So that's what is taken. So just take the difference between a grihastha and a grihamedi. Now, generally we take grihasthas, you know, nice, following all the principles. Grihasthas is, grihamedis is disgusting, breaking all the regulator principles, and, you know, you can't have enough superlatives to describe their terribleness. Right? But the only difference, you can have that, right? You wouldn't have that in a grihastha, but you can have that in a grihamedi. But the actual only difference between a grihamedi and a grihastha is who's in the center. That's all. If Krishna's in the center and all the aspects of my family and money and emotions go out from there, that's a grihastha. If the family itself and all that and being real Prabhu, and that's a grihamedi. Because the house is important and Krishna goes around the house. It's a very simple thing, which is prominent. So you simply have to analyze what are one's motives, what is it one wants to do, why is one doing what one is doing. It may not look pretty, but you know, but that doesn't matter. The point is then you know where you're at and then you can move forward. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a recommendation that regularly this should be done. Analyze your advancement and all that. So he gives just as an option, is like you could take every Ekadasi, since you know you have you're doing less of your normal mundane activities. So it gives you more time. It doesn't matter, but just on a regular basis, one should contemplate the advancement, the quality of the chanting, our motives, why we're doing things. Why do we want to be a manager? Why do we want to do this? Or why are we a family person? What is our real purpose? And even if we come up with the bottom line is a nice, mundane, you know, purpose, it doesn't matter. Because now that we know, we've identified it, now we can see how to Krishnaize that. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. You never lose. Like that. So even if you add it all up and it's all mundane practically, it doesn't matter, because now you know what mundane things you can engage in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? In other words, depending upon the individual nature, there'll be more or less involvement or sophistication or this or that. It doesn't matter. The more sophisticated, the more variety, the more that, that just means you have all that to engage in Krishna's service. And someone who's more simple and all that, then it's very straightforward. They only have one or two things to engage in Krishna's service. So it's very focused and nice. So each has its advantage. So it doesn't matter. So that's the thing, is that because an anartha is there, it's not a problem. The problem actually is not identifying it, right? You know what I'm saying? If someone's sick, that's not the real problem. It's not recognizing that they're sick, right? Someone who they cough and you go, oh, you have a cold and all that. Then they say yes. Then they can take medicine, they can wear clothes, they can be careful of drafts, they can be careful of what they eat, right? But if the person, no, I'm fine, then what happens? They just get sicker and sicker and it becomes more and more obvious because they refuse to accept. No. So, it's not a prestige thing. It's not a bad thing that there are anarthas. But it's not that, oh, hey, you know, I got this anartha, I got that anartha. Oh, hey, well, I got more anarthas than you. No, I'm more fallen than you, Prabhu. No. It's not like that. It's a matter of what is there, we see realistically, and we deal with it. Right? You know, it's like that. So, basically, there's a few, one is you look at okay, what is the quality of my chanting, my association with devotees, my hearing of Bhagavatam, my worship of the deity, and my, you know, respect and service to the Dham? You can start with those. That's, you know, very clear there. You can also start with my eating, my sleeping, my mating, my defending. You know, you can also start there. Where is it? There's another nice group. Yeah, my envy, attachment. That's, one can look at that. Forgiveness. You can look at status, okay, knowledge, influence, wealth, and age. Because those are also status things. What activities we do within Varnashram. Does that make sense? So it's just something to start from, because it, as long as you're absorbed, it doesn't matter if you take all of them or one of them or a part of one. If it's absorbing that you're working on it, then that works. That's good enough. They're saying the idea is to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So if you're simply absorbed in, okay, how to get my eating properly in Krishna consciousness, then it works. Right? But generally, you can't think of one thing all the time. That's why a variety is given. Does that make sense? Is that okay? So it's not a bad thing. It shouldn't... Bad means is that if in contemplating it, then we decide, oh, I'm so fine, I'm so useless, I can't do anything and this and that, and we aren't active in Krishna consciousness. That's useless. Then better don't contemplate, just do what you're told and be active. But if one's more mature, then one can see and then try to work on the quality. In other words, if by working on the quality, your quantity drops, then you're dealing too much with the quality. But when the quantity stays, and by contemplating the quality, you can improve the quality, then that is important. So that's the difference between the karma yogi and the jnana yogi. The karma yogi is more focused on the activity itself. The jnana yogi is more on the quality of it and what's behind it, the metaphysics of what modes are going on, what interactions, what, you know, those kind of things. So it doesn't matter. But it's just wherever one is at today, that's what one works at. That's the real time, place, and circumstance. Where you are today, that's what you deal with. Same time, you know where you want to go, so you just draw a line, straight line between those two and figure out how to get it done. Right? In other words, no position to start from is bad. It's just that wherever it is, you just go straight from there to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you're overcome with, you know, smartest stuff, you know, you're on the right of the razor's edge, then you just go from there to Krishna. And if you're on the left like that, then you draw a line there. You understand? So wherever it is, then you try to get to Krishna as quickly as possible. It's not a matter of, oh, this has... No, it's a matter of going from... How to get from here to there. Not, oh, how did I get... Is how did I get here will help you make sure that you don't make a mistake and get off the path again. But it's not something to contemplate and lament, and this, that's a mode of ignorance. Right? Mode of goodness is, mistakes have been made, what were those mistakes, and what did we learn from that, and how to be progressive. Right? So it's in fine balance between not getting caught up in the mistakes, but not just... Making mistakes is fine. No, making mistakes is not good. But that they are made, it's part of the process. Right? Does that make sense? Like a teacher, you're teaching a kid how to write the alphabet. I mean, it's not that the first level letter comes out, you know, and as great. You know, you make a new font for your computer. Right? You know, it's a matter of it's not good. And they're going to be doing pages and pages for days and weeks and months, and you know, it may take years for the handwriting to become really good. Right? But a teacher knows that, and so they'll put up with that. So it's a matter of how to get them from, you know, terrible to nice handwriting. Not that, oh, look at this, one page of badly written letters. Oh, no, this is finished. We'll never get in them. Oh, no. Yeah, then mridanga, you know? First mantra they give you, te, de, ke, ta. So we had one kid once, he couldn't grasp te, de, ke, ta. So the teacher taught him 1, 2, 3, 4. Because he couldn't relate to te, de, ke, ta. The teacher thought, this guy will never learn anything. But sometime after some months, he was actually quite good. He became a good mridanga player. But where he started from was way below where here, probably, you know, 99% of people start. You know, most people can figure out te de ke ta and remember the mantra and put the mantra together with the hand. This guy couldn't. Does that make sense? So that's the point of the spark. Where the spark is, that should be fanned. And what's not good, that then you make a plan how to... In other words, it's not how to get rid of the anartha, it's how that the anartha doesn't bother the spark. Because the spark, the growing into a flame, will burn up the anarthas. Because if your focus is on the anartha, I've got to get rid of this anartha, oh no, it's always like that, then all you're doing is you're anartha conscious. No, you want to be aware of the anarthas, but you want to be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? So we're there, but if we become absorbed in it, that's the mode of ignorance. It's a matter of it's there, so therefore I deal with it. You know, the brahmacharya. Okay, I have desire. I like the concept of being with women. I like the concept of taking that responsibility and having those kind of interactions. So I could go, oh no, I've finished everything and like this. And no, they just go, okay, so then the best thing is get married. So now, what to do about that? So then I have to find, and I'm interested in Krishna consciousness, therefore I should look for a suitable partner who has the same determination. Right? And then figure out how to identify that and see that it's actually there. Then see that those interactions and time spent together and responsibilities are engaged in Krishna service. The family members are becoming Krishna conscious. You know, the wealth is generated, is taken care of, everyone's comfortable according to their, you know, whatever is the basic needs they need, according to their conditioning, and it's all engaged in Krishna service. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, the emotions are proper standards of how, you know, the husband and wife should interact with each other according to Shastra. Like that, and so that's the plan, and that's what I do. Right? So it's not a matter of, oh, hey, you know, here he wants to get married and all that, or like that, or, you know, yeah, he's so called brahmacharis, you know. Both these mentalities are stupid. Like that. Does that make sense? So this is maturity, this is reality. Or it's a matter of, yes, okay, now I've heard about it. I've heard about, you know, what is grihastha life, this and that. And, I mean, it's very pleasant. It's very nice, the interactions. And I can deal properly with the women and all that. But I don't see a need to have an exclusiveness that, you know, that this is mine, a possessionness about it. Is that I do my service, and if it happens to be that sometimes I end up having to interact with women, that's fine. That's not a problem. But it's not that I want to cultivate that and generate that, you know, this is mine. So therefore, then they don't get married. Because they don't need that association. Does that make sense? And it's not a matter of, you know, women this and that and all those grihasthas. No, it's just a matter of, they're at a stage where they need that. I don't. Their anartha's attachment. My anartha's detachment. Because detachment also gets in the way. You know? Anything mundane gets in the way. But detachment is closer to the Viraja river than attachment. Therefore, it's considered superior. But, strangely, once you cross the Viraja river, then all you have is attachment. Right? There is no detachment over there. Does that make sense? So it's only considered in the material world things are superior because they get you out of the material world. In the spiritual world, they're not superior. That's superior and inferior just so that there's facility for interaction. Right? Because Brahmins are respected, therefore Madhu Mangal can go and do all the things he does in Krishna Leela. Right? He had this kid, but he's a Brahmin. Right? And he'll walk in, and you have these mature women. Many of them may be grandmothers. At least mothers. So they're definitely twice his age. Right? And so they will ask him, what can they do about, you know, their daughters not having any interest in their husbands. You know? They're saying, even though we have people we really dislike, but we would never wish upon them that their wife neglects them. We're not that bad. So what to do? Our daughters couldn't care less about their husbands. And so being a Brahmin and all that, then naturally he's going to give a response, you know, there's going to be something according to scripture and ritual. So it says, yes, no, this is very... So they must do this special yajna. It's like that. So they're not generating this proper... There's no, you know, amorous feeling. So they have to worship, you know, Cupid. So they have to go to the forest every day at this time, you know, after between 10:30 and 3:30. And... they should go, you know, and do this worship out in the forest, because Kamadeva lives in the forest, so they should go out there and they should do this worship every day, and very, very strictly and all that. And then it's, yes, 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 no, 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 girls, get together, you have to go worship, you know, like this and that. And they're going, did I just hear what I just heard? You know, our mothers-in-law are telling us, go out to the forest and worship Kamadeva? Like that. So who could tell them to do that, right? Of course, Kamadeva is Krishna. So gopis know that. Madhu Mangal knows that. The mothers-in-laws don't know that. Like that. Does that make sense? So how does this go on? Because there's this whole thing. There's yajnas in the morning. When Krishna gets up in the morning and goes to the cowshed, the Brahmins are doing their yajnas and chanting Vedic mantras. Krishna likes that. You know, it's how you say it, music to milk cows, Bobby, right? Does that make sense? So, it's there for rasa. It's the best, whatever there is, right? Does that make sense? So, that's what the spiritual world is. It's whatever's the best for creating rasa in that area, and or for enhancing and for interacting perfectly with each other, that's what goes on there. But here, because it's there, it can be converted into the mundane to create the whole social system and hierarchy that's actually to get us out of this consciousness into that consciousness. That's why it's perfect. Everything that comes from Krishna is perfect. So it's not two different things. That's the point. You don't have to operate the material world differently than spiritual. You just have to know how the exchange rate. You know what I'm saying? Money's money. You know, but here it's pounds and there it's rupees, or here it's dollars and here it's, you know, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? But money is money. It functions the same way. But there's a slight difference in application. You know what I'm saying? You know, this it takes 1 pound and here it, you know, it takes 40 rupees or 80 rupees. You understand? But it has the same power, it's the same potency. But this is going to be 80, and that's going to, oh, it's so different. You know, like one time I heard one devotee, we're discussing deity worship. And they were saying, the worship here is so different than where I came from in our yatra. You know, we do it this way, and here it's different. I'm so confused and all this. I don't know what to do, which is right. So what's the confusion? Well, in our temple, we take the bell for the artik, and we keep our arms straight, and we ring it. But here they say, bend the elbow and ring the bell. So I don't know which to do, which is right. And they're like, hello, you're supposed to ring the bell. You know, that's another thing. You're holding it. What about, like Prabhupada, to hang it out the end of the fingers and ring it that way? You ever try that one? Oh no, a third option. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? So it looks as different, but those who know money, they have no problem. So those who understand how the spiritual philosophy and culture work, there's no problem. Because the material is Krishna's energy, it's not going to function any different. It's just that its functioning reactions you get from it are temporary. and they decline. You get something out of it, it's short and it drops off. The spiritual world is forever and it keeps increasing. That's all. But how you operate is the same, right? You know, there they take a rasgulla, put it in their mouth. Here they take a rasgulla, put it in their mouth, right? Or there we put it in their mouth and here we rub it on top of our head. Or, you know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. But that's not overly emphasized because then we'll say, oh, everything I do is spiritual. No, it's only spiritual if your consciousness is spiritual and you know how to connect it. It's kind of like, oh, what I'm doing is spiritual, so explain it. If you can explain it, yes, it is. If you can't explain it, then no, it's not. Unless you don't know and someone else can explain it, and they're engaging you, then yes, it is spiritual, right? The new person doesn't know what's going on. They don't know washing pots is taking you back to Godhead, is cleaning the heart and this and that. They don't know that. But they just like the devotees and pots need to be washed and they like the feast, so hey, they want to help out. Right? But the person in charge can say, yes, by cleaning the pots, you have, that's why the potency is there. That's why they get the benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So somebody can explain it. So if you can explain it, then it works. If you can't explain it, then no. Oh yes, my whole house is Krishna conscious and engaged in Krishna service. Great. Tell us how it's done. You know? Like that, you know? Tell us how that Lego brick over in the corner is, you know? It's like that. You know what I'm saying? A little thing of dried flowers here, or a little potpourri over there, or, you know, the... You know, explain it. It can be explained. You know, because they have nice things in the houses in the spiritual world. I don't think Mother just showed us houses like bare. Sure, there's tons of stuff inside. You know? So you just have to be able to engage it as Mother just showed her engage it. She's got the biggest house. I think there's 100 rooms in Nanda Bhavan. There's 100 rooms. There's something. It's big. I've seen a map of it once. Huge amount of rooms. Like that. You know, so it's like that. Of course, it's smaller than Varshana, but like that. But it's... you know what I'm saying? So, and she's engaging all that. So we can do the same thing. That makes sense? So it's either directly with the mood and feelings, or it's through shastra, or through its, you know, it's just it's good or not good, right? Does that make sense? You know, so okay, woman is chaste. Okay, chaste because it's immoral to not be. Okay, and morality is defined by shastra. So therefore, the shastra says so. It's good. Does that make sense? Can be is that it's also that shastras say because this is where then you're going to get the proper focus and everything like that, because otherwise if she has too many, you know, men, then it's not going to function. She's not going to have, you know, it's not how many are Draupadi or the daughter of the moon god. You know, they have 10 husbands and be perfectly focused on each one whenever they're with that one. You know, they get full attention. Means as it is, one husband's enough that, you know, it's felt that he's, that there's attention. Right? So, properly this and that, and so therefore I don't want to disturb, and therefore like that. Okay, that's a little bit higher. You understand the culture behind it, and that's not just morality. Now it's dharma. Like that. I have my duties, they have their duties towards me, and therefore it's a deal. Right? Or we take it, I want to get out of the material world, and so therefore I have this attachment to family, and therefore I don't want to expand it, so therefore it's at one, and by performing my duties in knowledge with detachment, then I'm going to liberate myself from here. And so therefore I've reduced it down to, you know, all the men of the world down to this one. Right? Or you can go more is that Krishna himself is the male potency, and therefore he's coming to me through the form of this husband. And so therefore, you know, there's no need to look anywhere else. It's still the universal form, but it's still it's Krishna. I perceive it because of my attachments that it's this man. But actually that manly potency is Krishna. Because otherwise it's just dead matter. And the soul isn't that. Right? So here we've given, what, four or five different ways that the girl can look at chastity. And then you have, of course, Radharani's definition. That verse, written in mundane form, is right there in Manu. Basically, exactly. The husband's a debauchee, he's this, he's that, she stays with him. That's just like, you know, the farthest end this way of what Radharani gives, the farthest end that way. And so there's a connection in between on that principle, all the way through. So according to one's understanding, according to one's that, then it goes through. It doesn't need to be more, but if one is more simple, fine. The gopis weren't worried about all these shastric things. They just like Krishna, that's all. He's a cute kid, that's all. That makes sense? So one doesn't have to be a big intellectual. If one is a big intellectual, then engage him. If one's not, don't worry about it. But make sure you're physically involved. In other words, you have to be busy. So it's a proportion between intellectual and physical. So depending upon your nature, what stage you are in the life, then one or the other will be more or less prominent. That makes sense? Okay, so we'll continue. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayate Govardhanam ki.